It is 8:31. We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Plenty to cover, starting with just one local today, the elections, or election, I should say.
Yes, election. It's coming up on Tuesday is the deadline for the county's first all-mail ballot. That is the initiative-sponsored special election for an elections director, the person who oversees the elections in King County, thanks to Republican initiative, is now going to be elected by the people, or at least a couple of people, rather than being appointed and being an elections professional. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, where this was basically a Republican conspiracy, and I usually don't throw around words like conspiracy, but that's the conspiracy is people planning something together and then not really talking about it very openly. But the idea here was that they were displeased by the results of the 2004 election between Gregoire and Rossi, blamed the results on King County, and decided, well, what we really need to do is get a Republican running the elections department, and we won't have that problem again because they'll make sure that Republicans will win. So we now have two Republicans who have absolutely no expertise in elections running for the elections director head. We also have Cheryl Huff, who's the woman who came in a couple of years ago and cleaned up a lot of the problems with the King County Elections Department, running to keep her job. She's been endorsed by a lot of the Democrats simply because they don't have an ideologue who's running, because they don't think it should be an ideological position. They think it should go to somebody who could, you know, actually know something about elections. But David Irons, the former county commissioner who lost in his race to King County Executive Ron Sims, largely over revelation that he beat his mother, and then Pam Roach, who can we say on the air that she's bat guano crazy? I think that's a radio-friendly euphemism. She is one of the more notorious right-wing fringe whack jobs in Olympia, and she is also running for the position. And we had several revelations this week about this election as it unfolds. One is that as of last night, a well-placed source tells me that something around 10% of ballots have come in so far. That, for a mail-in election, let alone one in which all of the ballots will be mail-in, is a record low turnout so far, which plays into Republican hands, because again, you know, you get the base excited about something like this, and it doesn't take very many votes to swing an election. Meantime, we have David Irons lending himself over $100,000 of the $113,000 that he has raised for his campaign, which is why you're seeing ads and have probably gotten robocalls from the Irons campaign urging people to vote for him. That's all his own money. He's trying to buy his way into this seat. Pam Roach, however, doesn't have those problems. You remember the Building Industry Association of Washington, that far-right fringe group of developers and lobbyists who gave so much illegal money to Dino Rossi in his gubernatorial run this past year. Well, they're at it again. They've given Pam Roach $26,000 for her elections director run, which makes you wonder, why exactly is it the Building Industry Association of Washington, in a race where there are no contribution limits, would want so badly to elect somebody to that position?
Now,
were they not seeing it as a partisan race where you can get a partisan into the position of overseeing a technocratic department? So it's a very, very troubling race, and one in which not that many people, including, I'm betting, not many of our listeners, have voted so far. So if you haven't voted yet, get your ballot. Vote for Cheryl Huff, who's really the only, there's six people on the ballot, but she's the only one who's even remotely qualified to run the department. And, and vote for her several times and see if her newly competent department catches the errors, because quite frankly, we need the votes.
All right. Moving on to national, and our, we could almost do a weekly regular spot on the salmonella outbreak of the month.
Yeah, exactly. Folks have probably heard a little bit about the salmonella outbreak, and that you shouldn't be eating products that have peanut paste in them, as if you would know what products you're eating that have peanut paste. It's a very common processed food additive. And the trouble started with a Blakely, Georgia plant owned by Peanut Corporation of America. The salmonella outbreak, all told, has sickened more than 500 people in 44 states and possibly killed 8 people. At least one of those people who died, his or her family, is suing the Peanut Corporation of America for wrongful death. And the recall has covered about 400 products, and the number is increasing, it seems, every week. Now, the salmonella had not been at the plant just recently, it turns out. Salmonella was a consistent problem at that plant. In at least 12 previous tests done by the company itself, the production lines, you know, salmonella was found, and the production lines were never cleaned up afterwards. And in fact,
yeah,
the products...
if you read some of the descriptions of the conditions at the plant,
yeah,
it was just horrifying.
Cockroaches, leaky roof, all kinds of awful stuff that was getting into the food. The interesting part about it is that, of course, it really points to the FDA's, not testing, not doing any outside independent testing of any real factories until problems come up like this, until there's an outbreak where people die.
Actually, that's not even true, because we also learned this week that way back in April of last year, Canada refused a shipment from this plant because of filth that was in the plant, including metal fragments, and the FDA referred it back to the plant and ordered the plant to do its own testing. They found that the testing was unacceptable. The test the Peanut Corporation of America claimed that it's ran said, nope, we have no problems, everything is fine. The FDA rejected those tests as inadequate and not properly done, and then did not do anything to follow up
whatsoever. They have no enforcement ability. And
well, they didn't even do their own investigation.
Right.
Let alone enforcement.
Right. No, they don't do an investigation until people get sick and die, is the point. The emphasis has always been on companies doing their own testing, and that's what I want to talk about. When you give the companies the chance to do their own testing instead of having outside independent inspectors from the FDA, what you get is you get this kind of a situation where a company will do a test on a batch of the product, and then if it comes up positive, then they go back and they grab another test and they do a test on another part of the product, and they keep testing until it comes up clean, then they ship it out. That's what this company did, and they did this 12 times over the past 2 years. And so, of course, it was a disaster waiting to happen. But this is industry-wide. It's not just this one plant. It's many, many plants that do this, and the big problem is there's not the money and there's not the level of enforcement that should be there.
Yeah, and this is an ideological problem that was pervasive during the Bush administration, and it's going to take some time to correct. We're going to continue to have these kinds of problems for a while because you have an entire regulatory structure that's based on the idea of voluntary compliance, and we've seen time after time after time that voluntary compliance leads to very, very bad abuses, and mm-hmm. in this case, possibly to the deaths of at least 8 people.
Yeah.
Well... anything else on peanut butter?
No, let's move on.
Along similar lines, the EPA had some of its shackles taken off.
Oh, right. Yeah, where you have some areas of the government not doing any kind of regulatory enforcement, you have other areas of the government enforcing other directives that came down from the Bush administration. The EPA had been enforcing a Bush administration directive saying you must keep states from passing laws, putting into law regulations that are stronger than the federal government's for regulating auto emissions.
And, of course, the states were doing this because the federal government itself was under the Bush administration was refusing to.
Wasn't doing anything. Yeah, California's proposed rules would have made automakers have to cut greenhouse gas emissions by about 30% by the year 2016, which is a very modest cut compared to what is really needed in order to to deal with global warming. And then 13 other states jumped on the bandwagon, and they adopted California standards. But the Bush administration came back and said, no, you can't do that, and directed the EPA to come down hard on them. Well, Obama has this week issued a directive to make the EPA back off on that and to allow the states to put into place standards that are tougher than the federal governments for regulating vehicle emissions. Now, he's also told his economic team to sit down and come up with new stricter standards for mileage for automobiles, mileage standards for automobiles.
Yeah, and you're hearing already the conservative gnashing of teeth and commentators saying, well, this will destroy the auto industry at a time when it's already at its weakest. I mean, they just don't get it. The fact that the auto industry has been churning out these gas-guzzling monsters of vehicles and encouraging the public to buy them is why the American auto industry, as opposed to its foreign counterparts, is in so much trouble right now.
Yeah.
DC, if it does in fact get over the auto industry lobby and finally start enforcing some tougher standards, which is desperately needed from a public policy standpoint, would also in the long run do an awful lot to help the Detroit automakers when they won't help themselves by giving the public what it actually wants.
It's basically shoving them along the route they need to go in order to survive as businesses.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on, President Obama signing his first bill this week?
Yeah, he signed a bill this week that will make it easier for employees to sue companies who engage in pay discrimination. This stems from a Supreme Court decision in 2007 where the conservative majority ruled in a typical 5-4 Supreme Court decision that a person has to file a claim of discrimination within 180 days of receiving their first paycheck from the company. Now, this was patently ridiculous because most people never find out within the first 6 months that they never find out about this discrimination. Often it will take years before you find out that another employee who is doing the same work that you are doing is being paid more money because they're a man or because they're not a Muslim or some other kind of discrimination. And so the bill will actually set that 180-day limit. Will reset that 180-day limit every time you receive a paycheck. So if you are still employed, by the company, then you can sue them essentially, or within 6 months of receiving your last paycheck.
All right. Moving on the subject of bills, there was a S-chip. Related bill this week?
Yes, this was intensely controversial a couple of years ago when Congress tried to pass and President Bush vetoed, and Congress passed again and Bush vetoed again, money for the state children's health insurance program to try and provide assistance to uninsured children across the country, of whom there are millions. Well, the Senate very quietly passed a version of the bill this week with almost no controversy, 32 rather. This, with Republicans voting primarily again, almost entirely against it. This would provide $32.8 billion at a time, of course, of intense austerity in federal spending for social programs, or at least if it's not part of the stimulus package, which we'll talk about in a minute. But some 4 million children would be insured under this bill. And what was really remarkable about it was how little controversy there is over it. The House is expected to pass it next week, and Obama is expecting to sign it into law.
Yeah, and what's interesting is this was so desperately needed that even with this new bill in place, there'll still be, estimates vary between 3 to 5 million children who are still without health insurance in this country.
Yeah, it's been characterized by Obama as a start. They plan to do quite a bit more, and we'll see what shape that takes.
Yeah, we'll see if there's money for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of money, how about this week's economic news?
Yeah, the House passed a stimulus bill that I've talked about in the past. I think I probably talked about it last week or the week before. The House version is $819 billion, of which more than a third is related to tax cuts. Now, what was interesting was the vote was strictly along party lines. Democrats supported it, and Republicans unanimously opposed it. And it's highly ironic because the tax cuts have a, I would say, no one can really prove that tax cuts ever do much to stimulate the economy. But they were thrown into the bill and included because they were supposed to gain Republican support for the bill, and it was clearly a failure. And I also want to point out that the money for infrastructure in this bill comes to about 11% of the total. And if we look at it locally for Washington State, it breaks down to about $529 million for transportation projects in the state of Washington. Once you allocate funds to local governments to spend for transportation projects, it leaves about $291 million left for the state. And those are going to be used for small projects like highway interchanges. None of it will go for the 520 bridge or the viaduct.
Yeah. Now, some of that can change because the Senate still has to pass the bill, and then
its
version of the bill, and then it'll go into committee for compromises. And a lot of the line items like that wind up being changed during that process. But as it stands now, the state of Washington is not going to get a lot of help out of this economics bill for its transportation issues.
That's right. And we're just not seeing the kind of infrastructure projects we would hope for something like this.
Yeah, one would have expected from the lip service paid to infrastructure that, you would expect like a third of the bill to go towards infrastructure.
At least you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and to be fair, Jay Inslee and a number of other progressives in the House made this point and opposed the stimulus package precisely because
so much of it
was spent on, you know, expansion of existing government programs, and not very much was dedicated either to infrastructure or toward the long-term retooling of the economy.
Yeah.
All right. Other economic news?
Yeah, the Obama administration will be announcing...
You just keep saying that phrase.
The Obama administration will be rolling out their plan next week to bail out banks. And, of course, they have to come up with a plan because the Bush administration plan was to put it off until Obama got into office, and then it would be his problem.
And his fault when the economy tanked.
Yeah, and so the past couple of weeks with banks announcing record losses for the fourth quarter and deeper losses than in previous quarters, clearly things are not getting better for them. So the Obama administration has to come up with their own plan. And it's clear that the first $350 billion spent by the Treasury really hasn't done very much. So some of the things that they're talking about, and we'll see next week what they actually announce, one of the things is setting up a bad bank to buy up all the bad loans. Now, you might say, bad bank, isn't that kind of redundant? But the real question here is, there's a couple questions about the bad bank. One of them is, what price do you set on the assets that you're going to buy when they're not being traded? And that's one of the big reasons why they're particularly have no value right now. One of the problems with the economy is that these assets can't be sold on any market because nobody's buying. The question is, who sets the price and how? Timothy Geithner has talked about three options. The first option I call the catch-22 option. It would value the assets according to other assets that are still being traded. The problem, of course, is that most assets of this class are not being traded, and so they have no value. So that's kind of the catch-22 option. Option number two is they would use a computer model to value the assets. That's a question of reliability there. Computer models are only as good as the data you put into
garbage
them.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. And then there's option number three, which would rely on assessments by bank regulators. That's highly subjective and very subject to influence by big banks. In other words, banking regulators may pay more for the assets than they're really worth, which means taxpayers would be getting a particularly bad deal. So that's a problem, and it's a problem that Henry Paulson ran into, and it's why the Bush administration didn't do that in the first place and why they just threw the money into the banks to recapitalize them. Other proposals that they're talking about to maybe stabilize the banking system include the government insuring troubled assets, in other words, keeping the assets on the bank's books and basically issuing insurance to those companies saying, we will cover, the U.S. Treasury will cover your losses on these assets. That's throwing money into a black hole, I think. Another proposal that they're talking about is more capital injections into banks. Yes, yes, exactly. That's what we've been doing in the past, which hasn't been working. But they're talking about maybe doing more. And
would that be with any kind of, you know, like ownership share or influence on how the banks actually spend that money?
That's the question.
It's like economic Botox.
Yeah. That's the question. They want to say, they're saying now that they would do capital injections in exchange for common shares, but they're not saying whether those shares would be voting shares or not. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that they're going to opt for voting shares, in which case the U.S. government would be getting some form of influence over these banks.
We can't mention the N-word, whatever we do.
No, you can never mention nationalization, but that would be a step towards it, I think. So in the midst of all this, Democratic Senator Charles Schumer said that he'd talked to some quote-unquote experts who think it will take as much as $4 trillion to set up a bad bank. So keep that number in mind next week.
I'm looking forward to
a trillion here, a trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the commercials and the jingle they come up with for the bad bank.
Yeah.
That'll be entertaining.
Do you get a bad toaster if you open an account there?
At the bad bank.
All right.
Anyway, and one more piece of economic news that came out of Davos, Switzerland, at the big World Economic Forum there this week. We've been hearing a lot about denunciations of Israel over Gaza, et cetera. But one thing that didn't get a lot of airplay was the Chinese premier standing up, shaking his finger at the U.S. and saying, you guys are responsible for the global economic downturn. And that's not such good news, because China right now is our biggest creditor. And if the Chinese government decides to stop buying U.S. treasuries, we would be in major hot water.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, the Chinese actually are correct. But the fact that they're willing to say so publicly is a diplomatic and a policy issue, as well as
unusual for China.
Yes, it is. It's very unusual, and it implies that their patience with the U.S. government, regardless of who is the head of it, is likely to be very short.
And their patience with these banks as well.
Yeah.
That paid out about $18 billion in bonuses in December, even though all of them. Uniformly across the board had record losses.
All right. Moving on, and still on a economic note, things might have been bad for most companies, but ExxonMobil appears to be doing okay.
Yeah, they suffered in the fourth quarter like everybody else when the price of commodities tanked, but still managed to announce this week that they had record profits last year, $45.2 billion, which is the largest annual profits of any corporation in world history. That's up from the previous record, which was also held by ExxonMobil in 2007 of $40.6 billion. That tells you again just how much money was looted out of the economy by the oil companies last summer when gas prices were so high, even at the social cost of food riots in many parts of the world because people were suffering so badly. But they made money hand over fist during the last days of the Bush administration.
All right. And also this week, a Supreme Court ruling.
Yes. Maria was talking a few minutes ago about 5-4 conservative majority Supreme Court rulings. We had another bad one this month with the Supreme Court, led by Chief Justice Roberts, ruling basically that the exclusionary rule in evidence gathering in criminal cases it doesn't really apply anymore. The exclusionary rule, for people who aren't familiar, says that if evidence is gathered illegally, it cannot be used in a court of law. And Roberts' opinion was basically, well, if it was an honest mistake. Now, of course, the problem with this is anybody who has followed grand jury proceedings when police and law enforcement in King County kills anybody is that juries always, always, always believe the law enforcement officer. So if they get up on the stand and say, yeah, we had a SWAT team come in, and we had 45 people and accidentally invade the wrong house at 4 in the morning, but we did find a couple marijuana plants, that's okay now because that was an honest mistake. So it's very, very troubling, and a very bad precedent that's already being embraced by the lower courts.
All right. And quickly, there is a new face on the Republican Party.
Yes, Michael Steele is the new chair of the Republican Party. Why is this notable? Because Steele is African American, and for quite some time now, he's been ascending through the Republican Party ranks. Not just because he's bright and competent, which he is, although he hasn't. He was former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, ran for the Senate and lost rather badly. But he's become popular because he is a token African American in the Republican Party. Now that token has risen to become the head of the Republican Party, just as Barack Obama becomes president, which frankly smacks of the worst kind of tokenism, and it is really unfair to Steele himself, because he is by all accounts a competent guy, but that's not why he was selected by the Republican Party faithful.
All right, moving on to international and Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq is having provincial elections today, which will tell us a lot now about the relative strength of Muqtada al-Sadr, who is backing two different so-called independent parties in today's provincial elections, and about the weakness of the Maliki government, which is widely seen as being in bed with the Americans and prolonging the American occupation.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about this election versus the earlier elections in Iraq is that this time around the Shiite groups aren't united in one coalition. They're all
separate parties. They're very fractured.
Yeah, and this is going to lead to some problems, I think, in southern Iraq in particular. But they're all told is more than 400 different parties running in the various provincial elections. And so it's a huge list of candidates, a huge number of different parties with different perspectives. And it's maybe good for democracy, but it might not be so great for cohesion in Iraq.
Yeah. All right. Or the possibility of preventing civil war.
Yeah.
All right, and finally, the Army is setting new records.
Yes, and not good records at that. The Army quietly announcing this week that soldiers committed suicide at a record rate in 2008, largely due to the stress of prolonged tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. That suicide rate is now double what it was in 2004, one of the hidden but still very troubling costs of the multiple wars America is engaged in.
All right. And events?
Yeah, coming up this week is the Seattle Human Rights Film Festival between Wednesday and Sunday, showing all over town for information on times and films. And there's always a lot of very good ones every year. Go to SHRFF. That's short for Seattle Human Rights Film Festival, oddly enough. SHRFF.org has all the times and places and films.
Very good. All right. Talking as we do every week with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks with fine analysis of news and commentary and comics and so forth. Now the exclusive home of Tom Tomorrow, now that Seattle Weekly has dropped all comics. You can find it wherever you find free publications, that the bookstores and King County Library System and cafes and coffee shops and so forth. You can also find us on the web at www.eatthestate.org. And if you have comments, questions, tips, would like to volunteer, we're looking for a calendar editor to replace our current Bruce Greeley, who's been doing a yeoman's job for a couple of years and wants to move on. So if you're interested in finding out about all those cool events before anybody else, let us know. And if you want to contact us for that or any other reason, info at eatthestate.org.